fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Today we have something totally different on the menu. We're serving up something different, and pretty soon you'll be hitting me over the head for bad puns, because our guest is Joshua Cutchin. He is the author of a recent book, and this is one of the most unique topics I've ever heard in this area of Fortiana in 10 years of doing these programs. It's called A Trojan Feast, The Food and Drink Offerings of Aliens, Fairies, and Sasquatch. And really an amazing topic. Joshua is a native of North Carolina with a long interest in Fortiana. He holds a master's in music literature and a master's in journalism from the University of Georgia, and currently works as a public affairs specialist in the Southeast. In addition to his media work, Joshua is also a published composer and maintains an active performing schedule as a jazz and rock tuba player. That's pretty cool. Having appeared on 8 albums and live concert DVDs, A Trojan Feast is his first book. Joshua, welcome to the program today.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan of all of your work. And
thank you
for calling me cool for playing the tuba. That's not something I get very often.
That is cool. I mean, in those settings, you know, you don't necessarily, you think of it in a marching band, you don't think about rock and jazz. That is awesome.
Well, thanks so much.
So I have to ask you, this is such a unique topic, as I said at the beginning here. I've been doing these shows 10 years, and a lot of times there's, there's the 75th book about Roswell or something like that. There's sometimes a bit of repetition. This is a truly unique idea. How did you come up with it?
Well, I've been a big fan of these sort of topics for a while, and I've often had this feeling that to sort of turn a phrase on its head, we've been missing the trees for the forest, as it were. I think that a lot of these small details probably should undergo a little bit more scrutiny than they do. So this is one of those things that I'd always noticed. And I'd also noticed at the same time that no one was really writing about it. And the final straw for me was when I was reading J. Robert Alley's Raincoast Sasquatch, which is a great book. I really recommend anybody pick it up if they can, if they're interested in the subject of Bigfoot. But he talks about in one section on that how First Nations folks in North America had certain legends that if one were to take food from a Sasquatch, they would actually be trapped with the Sasquatch forever. And I immediately saw parallels between that and the fairy faith, which in Celtic lore always said that if you were to be given food by a fairy, if you were walking along the road, some darkened lane at night, and a member of the fairy folk gave you food, and you were to take this food and to eat it, then you would be trapped with them forever. So mm-hmm. Seeing these two parallel mythologies on either side of the Atlantic really got me thinking about possibly there being something more to this.
When you think about it, there is something about food that is life-giving in some ways in itself. It seems almost mystical, the idea that you consume this item and it gives you energy and it gives you life. So I guess food does fit very well in the area of mysticism.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's tied in with so many things that we do culturally and as a community. It's something that has, you know, religious overtones, such as in communion, and there are a lot of different avenues that you can take with this. I had to really sort of dial down early on in the project just to be able to get my arms around this, because it could go in so many different directions. And I really tried to focus on the food and drink offerings, the idea that these entities that people meet, usually over a very short period of time, will offer them food. It's what I call a minor motif in alien abduction lore. And the idea that they're giving people food for sustenance just doesn't really seem to make much sense to me, because, as I said, a lot of these encounters are very short. So I have to wonder if perhaps it's not for the purpose of administering some sort of effect on people or to some sort of other end besides just simple nutrition.
Maybe in some ways it's almost a social thing.
Right. Right. And you know, I tend to look at this subject through the lens of sort of a modern mythology and modern myth-making. And in a lot of ways, I'm less interested in the objective reality of these things than I am in the common thread that lies throughout. That's where I find a real value for me personally.
Now, you talked about fairy folk, but it you have a chapter in here that talks about E.T. and Bigfoot. Now, with E.T., I've never even thought about E.T. and food. Where does food play in with E.T.?
Well, you know, it's funny. Some people have said in the past that that food doesn't really feature in the abduction experience. It mostly features in the contactee experience. And while the giving of food is definitely more common in the contactee experience, if you look at a lot of alien abduction reports, people are being force-fed liquids sometimes, or they're being given injections, which is sort of a variation on that particular trope, or they're being given pills, always under duress. You know, it's kind of interesting how the way that people consume things really lines up with the character of these encounters. In several chapters, I go into how contactee cases involve food and how abductee cases involve food. And contactee cases are always positive and voluntary in the consumption of food, and the food usually tastes really good, really sweet. In abductee cases, they're obviously done under duress. They're obviously involuntary. And these foods are usually force-fed or people are, you know, threatened if they don't consume this liquid or this pill that they're given. So it's really interesting to see how the particular offerings also line up with the character of these encounters.
It reminds me of that old Twilight Zone, To Serve Man. And at the end, the gentleman who was taken up on the spaceship, he's sitting there, and they offer the ETs that are going to basically serve up humanity as so much cattle are offering him food, and he doesn't want to eat it. And they say something like, "Well, Mr. Smith, please eat. We wouldn't want you to lose weight."
It's a cookbook. Yeah, it's a great episode.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Now, another thing that you talk about here, and when I think of liquids in Fortiana and the supernatural, I think of vampires and the drinking of blood and those kind of things, the taking the essence of the life force and so forth. Is that part of it, or is there more to it than just vampires drinking blood?
Well, I think that there is something to that idea of supernatural entities consuming some sort of ethereal essence. You know, if vampires take life force from blood, well, fairies actually tended to take the essence of food, which they called the foison. And they wouldn't actually take the food. They would just take it, what made it healthy, what made it good, what made it, you know, so almost like the caloric content they were taking. Right. And of course, you know, it's easy to write that off as the reason why fairy offerings left out overnight aren't consumed in the morning. But there are plenty of anecdotal reports of people who say that they saw livestock or cats either avoiding fairy offerings that are left out and have been taken by the fairies, or actually eating these essenceless foods and becoming sick. So that's really interesting in the way that there's sort of a parallel there in terms of the idea of extracting something ethereal from the food.
And then we talk about fruit. And one of the... again, when we take a look at something like the Bible, and it always kind of gives me a kick when Christians, for example, and I'm of the Christian faith, although a lot of people wouldn't quite consider me conventional, but when people say, "Well, I believe in the Bible, but I don't believe in this supernatural stuff," and I'm like, "Hold the phone a minute. Have you read your Bible lately?"
It's the most supernatural book there is.
Exactly. You know? And going back to fruit, and obviously the fruit of the tree of knowledge and Adam and Eve, I mean, fruit has a certain connotation, I would think, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, I mean, a big part of this book, too, is looking at the symbolism of these things. And not only do you have, you know, this idea that the fruit of Adam and Eve, either an apple or a pomegranate, different traditions, or as I'm sure has been broached on this podcast before, the idea that maybe it was something like a psilocybin mushroom or something like that, but the fruit of knowledge. But also you have other just general things that really do tie into the Fortean phenomena as a whole. You know, you look at all these different subjects, and aliens, fairies, and Sasquatch all seem to be really interested in our reproductive system in all these stories. You know, Sasquatch will abduct a girl for baby-making purposes, and fairies will father a child with an unwary traveler, and aliens, of course, we know all about that. But it's interesting that fruit is sort of tied up in that idea of reproduction and of fertility. You know, in some European folklore, you could actually make trees bear fruit if a pregnant woman ate the fruit first. You know, you think of fruits being round and fruits having a seed inside, not unlike a metaphor for the pregnant woman. So it's really interesting how that's one of the more common foods in alien, fairy, and Sasquatch lore. Right after liquids. It's really interesting to see how that sort of parallels with overall trends.
Now, since we touched on the subject of sexuality, you have further down the book, you have a section on that, but we always think of, when I think about that in supernatural context, you obviously think about the vampire, then you think about the incubus and the succubus. I think that's a part that maybe we lose sight of because it's something, you know, we don't want to go there. We don't want to talk about that. But sexuality is wrapped up in these things of alien abduction, obviously, when you talk about various supposed medical exams and the idea of hybrids. So it's more than just the incubus and the succubus, isn't it?
Well, what's that old thing? It's the idea of it's the idea that the three things that you don't talk about in Western culture are sex, death, and UFOs. Yeah, it is all sort of, as I said, you can't really talk about this without bringing this up, I don't think. And a lot of times, sometimes these foods are given in close proximity to some sort of sexual act. People are, you know, a lot of times fairies would almost barter for sexual favors with food. There's one version of Snow White where she's actually offered a roof over her head and a meal for the night if she beds down with one of the dwarves. There's also a tale called the Loathly Lady. It's an Irish folk tale where a fairy queen disguises herself as an old hag, and she actually rescues a knight and demands his hand in marriage. And to seal the deal, they actually share a drink together, and she reveals herself as a beautiful fairy. So yeah, it's interesting that in a lot of fairy lore, it's sort of like a pact that's sealed with food. You know, aliens seem to be less concerned about consent. So you'll have people, you know, given some sort of liquid right before they have semen or eggs extracted from the body. You know, in Carla Turner's Into the Fringe, she talks about an abductee who was given some sort of liquid that smelled like cinnamon, right before being seduced. And of course, you know, you look at this, phenomena as a whole, and the idea of a substance being administered to produce an effect, well, you've got to look at, you know, the idea that perhaps ointments are a version of this entity food trope. You know, this is the idea that something can be smeared on your skin to produce an effect, this sort of form of ingestion. And in those cases, man, a lot of cases involve ointments being put on someone before some sort of sexual act in alien abductions. The Villebois case being one of the most famous.
The where does Sasquatch come into play with this? Because this is fascinating to me. Did you do a study of what maybe Sasquatch eats or what he offers humans during an encounters? What did you find in that area?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've talked with some folks who are like, why can't it? I kind of am surprised that you put Sasquatch in here. And you know, the real reason that Sasquatch wound up in this book is because of that initial connection that I mentioned about the idea of being given food by Sasquatch and having to stay with them. But there are other parallels between fairy folklore and Sasquatch folklore as well. You look at the food that fairies were to give you that would supposedly trap you, actually was never food at all. It was always some sort of detritus, some sort of tree bark or leaves and frogs and worms, cloaked in glamour to actually appear as appealing food. Similarly, some First Nations folks in North America have lore that says that when Sasquatch were to offer you dried salmon, you would eat it and it would actually turn out to be tree bark. So there are some parallels there. Having said that, credible tales of Sasquatch abduction are difficult to come by. And credible tales of Sasquatch consumption that involve credible tales of Sasquatch abduction that involve the offering of food are even harder to come by. But there are a handful, you know. The most famous is probably the Albert Ostman case. He's a gentleman who swore an affidavit in 1957 that he said he had been abducted by Sasquatch 33 years earlier. The Sasquatch came and took him in a sleeping role and brought him to this small valley. And while he was there, they gave him sweet roots to eat. Similarly, there's another story of a young Indian woman named Seraphine Long, who was taken by Sasquatch. And she was given roots, fish, and meat to eat. So it's interesting to me because I really tried to go into this with as open a mind as I could. From what I can tell, this data seems to suggest that Sasquatch is something a little bit different than aliens and fairies. I'm a big fan of the sort of Jacques Vallée thinking that there's some real strong connections between aliens and fairies, but I'm not really sure that Sasquatch fits in that mold. Still, there are enough cases to warrant its inclusion.
And that's a question for you, and this is a theme that's come up on the shows for the last several months, and I've repeated myself many times to many different guests, but I'll, at risk of doing that, I'll do it yet again. When I got into this stuff when I was a kid and interested in it, I had the feeling that UFOs were in this category, ghosts were in that category, Sasquatch was in another category, and they were all siloed and never the, well, in this case, never the trio shall meet. The more people I talk to, there's a thought that there are connections between different areas of the, quote, paranormal and the supernatural. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think that the older that you go, the further along into this that you get, the more that you see that there is a lot of connective tissue between all these things. And I feel like when I talk about the book, I get a lot of people who think that I think that aliens are fairies and fairies are aliens and Sasquatch is all this too. To me, it's less about that. It's less about a pie chart and more about a Venn diagram, if that makes any sense.
Oh, interesting.
So to me, it's the idea that maybe these things aren't the same thing, but they're used similar methods. Maybe they're two sides of the same coin. That's a possibility. But maybe they're two different coins with similar looking sides, if that makes any sense. I really do think that if you look at the data, you can't help but acknowledge that there's something, some sort of really deep connection between all this that does exist. So, you know, I personally try to stay kind of on the fence about it, which I'm sure I'll get criticized for as I continue to to be involved in this field. But to me, that's the only way that I can really be honest with myself about it.
One area that you talk about, which often comes up on our campfire program where people share their true stories of the supernatural, and I was really amazed about how many times the idea of shadow people come up, and this idea of you're in bed, you're asleep, you wake up, you can't move, and you see this awful creature. And you actually talk about sleep paralysis in this book. Can you tell us the context that came up and what were some of your findings?
You know, it's really interesting. You get a lot of these tales of people having sleep paralysis, and it's easy to write it off as something completely biological. But, you know, there have been plenty of accounts of people who actually see the entity as blurry during sleep paralysis when they don't have their glasses on, which I think is kind of it's really interesting to me. And sleep paralysis does have some connections here. You know, certain foods all the way back to antiquity were thought to give people sleep paralysis. There were some people in the 19th century who said that they could bring out an attack of incubus by eating avocados. And, you know, most famously, Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. You know, there's more of gravy than of grave about you seeing the ghosts in his home. It's interesting to me that you find in the Yoruba tradition of Western Africa how attacks of what they call Ogun Oru, which we would know as sleep paralysis, are brought on by accepting food from an entity in a dream. So I find that really compelling, the idea that the consumption of something in an altered state, because dreaming is, you know, an altered state of consciousness, can have an effect on the body in the reality in their particular tradition. So that sort of line of thinking leads one down a lot of different roads in terms of what this could actually be, because I have to, at the end of the day, find it very unlikely that an alien, be it an actual alien, be it interdimensional, be it an extraterrestrial, be it even the fairy folk, would come up to someone and say, here's a loaf of bread. It just doesn't make much sense to me. So I have to think that, again, tied in with this idea of glamour, the food being cloaked to appear to appear differently. And the idea that you run into a lot of abduction stories, of screen memories, I think that there's something to it where what you see is not always as it seems.
You know, one thing that's interesting, I was looking through your book before we started here and found an interesting anecdote about Men in Black and Jell-O. And I thought that was one of the most humorous things I ever heard, and I'd never heard that before.
You know, it's really interesting. People talk about the famous account of Major Richard French, who visited a witness in 1967, supposedly a man in black, who was offered Jell-O and tried to drink it. But I found another account by Jacques Vallée of a man in black who appeared at a diner in California in 1976 and was given Jell-O and tried to drink it as well. So apparently men in black have a lot of trouble with Jell-O.
Now, do you get the feeling, anything that you ever encountered or have studied, is there any evidence for ET not only offering food, but needing food for their own sustenance, that they need to consume food? Was there any indication of that at all?
You know, I really do think that this is all sort of part of the same thematic makeup. And just as fairies were given offerings back in the day, aliens occasionally accept offerings from folks as well today. There's one gentleman who was taken in Brazil, I believe, and he was given a what looked like an empanada, and he offered them one of his beers from his six pack. You know, similarly, you could view if you ascribe to the idea that UFOs are the source of cattle mutilation, you could view that as sort of them taking things from us, them taking food from us, or them taking livestock, which again finds a lot of parallels in fairy lore as well. During that great airship wave, some people were actually called out by people aboard the airship asking for food. One of the really more humorous ones was a guy who was asked to make 4 dozen egg sandwiches and a kettle of coffee out of Michigan. Wow. I can just imagine being woken in the middle of the night and getting that request. And then most famously, I can't have a conversation about this without talking about Joe Simonton, the gentleman from Eagle River, Wisconsin, who was given 4 cookies or 4 pancakes, you'll hear him described different ways, in exchange for a pail of water that he gave to some entities, allegedly.
And the thing of it is I just don't, I mean, I guess it's hiding in plain sight. We all see this, but I'm really amazed that you were able to come up with this and be able to share it with us. And nobody else had thought of it. It really is one of the truly unique ideas out there. What have people's reaction been to it?
Well, thanks so much for those kind words. You know, I sort of wrote this book because I wanted to read a book about this and no one had written it. So far I've gotten some really kind words from a lot of people that I really respect. I was speaking with our mutual friend, Micah Hanks, back in July. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him that, I used to carry around this book of Jerome Clark's Unexplained. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, mm-hmm. but I used to carry it around back in middle school. I used to carry this book around, and it's covered in packing tape from where my mom had to repair the cover. And imagine my overwhelming feeling when Jerome Clark gave it a favorable review, my book, and 14 times. It's just crazy. And Nick Redfern has said some very kind things about it over on his review on Mysterious Universe. And so far I've been getting a lot of really good feedback. And I should hope that part of that is because I try to not make any real conclusions. I try to present evidence, and then my last chapter is the only chapter that's in first person because I want to make it very clear that this is the chapter where I step in, and these are my thoughts versus everything that I've laid out.
Now, this is going to seem like a really off the wall question, but let's say that we wanted to invite something Fortean into our life, whether it's Sasquatch or ET or whatever. What food offering would probably be the one most likely to attract attention from the other realms?
Well, you know, it's a difficult question because if you put stuff out, who knows what might take it? You know, you might get a raccoon that comes along and drinks all the milk. But, you know, having said that, I think the people who have had the most success, if you believe that they're being completely honest and that they're completely sane, which I know a lot of people who have some nuanced feelings about, are Sasquatch habituators who will often leave out, like, for example, a bag of apples strung high in a tree, and they'll find those gone in the morning, and they'll find in its place a feather or a river stone or something. I'm not really sure how I feel about habituators, because these are people who purportedly have long-standing relationships with Sasquatch, and they never really present any good concrete evidence. You know, I think Tim Banal's program the other day, he was talking about how if you've been spending 4 years giving Bigfoot peanut butter in the forest, put up or shut up with your evidence. but that's definitely one way. You know, you don't really hear much about fairy folk anymore, and when you do, it's usually a fleeting glimpse. But you know, as recently as the turn of the last century, people were still putting out milk, and you know, in some remote parts of the British Isles, they were still putting out milk for fairies and still leaving out bread. Above all, milk and bread seem to be some really common things especially in fairy and Sasquatch lore. I'm not really sure how just sitting something out for an alien would be. I don't know if how that would work. Maybe set out some Jack Daniels and that'll calm him down.
There you go. Maybe. one thing that you know, if you look at folklore and so forth, one of the themes, or even things like fairy tales, you know, somebody offering you a poison fruit or a poison dish. You know, and that's something that's very sinister, and that whole idea that they could tempt you with something that's beautiful and glistening, and then it'll lead you to your demise. And I'm sure there's a lot of that through the lore.
You know, it's really interesting. It sort of ties into the title of the book, the idea that what you're being given is some sort of sinister effect on you, and the idea that perhaps the food is a means of gaining entry into you as a person, a Trojan feast, as it were. You know, it really is interesting. You do run into some of that. For example, there was a case in, I believe it was Brazil. A lot of these cases come from Brazil, which I think is you can probably determine a lot about a culture and the value that they place on food by where these different accounts come from. But one case in Brazil in 1994, where was this couple that were walking along a road and encountered this strange, tall, luminous being who told her to not be afraid and to stay calm. And he actually gave her some sort of orange ball that she actually ended up thinking might be poison. Which brings us to something that I've found really compelling in all these stories. When people consume these things voluntarily, I mean, I wouldn't take a Snickers bar from a guy on the subway.
Right.
But you have these people, you know, encountering a you know, little green man on a road at night and accepting, you know, here, drink this. Which I think says something about the state of the witness's mind and all this.
Well, it's a fascinating subject. If you're into Fortiana, if you're into the supernatural, I would recommend this to have a feast on a Trojan feast, the food and drink offerings of aliens, fairies, and Sasquatch. Joshua, where can people find it?
It's available on barnesandnoble.com as well as amazon.com. And for myself, my hub for all things musical and my blogs is joshuacutchin.com, joshuacutchin.com. That'll keep updates about upcoming radio interviews like this one, and also performances where you can see me playing.
Joshua, thank you for coming on the show and for a delicious conversation.
My absolute pleasure.
And thank you so much. We appreciate you tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.